Welcome to the Asian Highway, where stories are told and everybody has a seat at the table. Join us on a journey each week as we explore the individual stories of the people who truly define what it means to be an American. This is Storytellers in Action, a podcast telling the story of our people. What's your story? All right, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Wherever you are, whenever you are, you're back here on the Asian Highway. This is Season 4, Episode 2. Welcome back. We're here at Visual Communications at the Potluck Studios, Little Tokyo of Los Angeles. I'm your host, Pimo. This is Storytellers in Action, AH1's flagship podcast. We have Dabesh Das here across from me. Good evening.
Good evening, sir.
How are you?
I'm doing quite well, thank you.
We don't have Feriel Khan today. We will miss her. But we do have a lovely guest here in studio with us. She is probably one of my favorite thespians out there. Lovely actor from the United Kingdom. She's now here in Hollywood. Her name is Tamina. Hi, Tamina.
Hello. Well, that was a really nice welcome.
Oh, well, yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. Tamina, what's your last name?
Sunny.
Sunny.
As in a sunny day.
Yeah. That's what I wanted you to
Could
say.
Could you imagine if I wasn't bright and I was like dull? You'd be like, maybe you might need to change your last name. But I smile a lot.
I know. This is exactly why I asked you to say the last name, not me. Because I wanted
Otherwise,
you to set that
Tamina
up.
Tamina cloudy.
Right? Tamina dull.
Tamina overcast.
Yeah.
No, none of those are bland.
Yeah. It doesn't work. Yeah.
No.
Stick to what it is.
Absolutely.
I think so.
Tamina, you and I go way back.
We do. Hey, buddy.
How's it going?
It's going, yeah.
You didn't recognize me when you saw me today.
I know. I was like, you're half the man to know.
Isn't that a Stone Temple Pilots song?
Is that?
I don't know.
I don't follow Stone Temple Pilots, but... Sure. It is what it is. Anyways, I also want to give, before we go on, I want to say what's up to Marvin Yue. Thank you again for producing,
as always.
Marvin just came back from TIFF. I'm sure we'll have some great film chatter after we talk with Tamina today. But Tamina, I know we were trying to get you in here a while ago, and you kind of rejected me initially. But you came around to your senses, and you're back here in studio.
Hey,
and...
be nice.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, her last name is Sunny. Be nice.
Right?
Anyways.
So we're friends?
We are friends. I know. But we're back here, and we have you here finally, and you're working on something new. Can you please tell us what is this great news you have to share with us?
Absolutely. So for the last 4 months, I've been stationed in Bulgaria filming a really fun sci-fi TV show called Pandora, and it's been airing on the CW network in the US and the Space Channel in Canada.
Tell us a little bit more about your character. Who is she? What is she in the story? And how did you get to learn about who you're playing?
So, you know, at first, when they give you the material, what we call the sides, which is little elements from the script, you don't really get much of a palette of colors for who or what the character is going to be. So you just put your best judgment and just go for it. So I saw her as this sort of really interesting, colorful character whose agenda is, you know, power. So it was really fun to play a character. And once being on set, I just call her Hell in Heels. Is the best way I can describe her.
Wow.
Yeah.
I like that.
Is there anything from the character you would adopt in your own life?
I really like her, the way that she's very tenacious. And so I think that's who I am, but she goes to all means necessary in order to kind of like do what she feels right in her eyes. And so that was really interesting, bringing an element of that into a character where it's just like full gung-ho, go for it.
Sure. And were you, what city in Bulgaria? Sofia?
Yes, Sofia.
So tell us about that experience being in the city. And have you been to Eastern Europe before?
You know, so I haven't been that far east.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of flying in, it was so interesting because it felt like, I don't know, like what I thought... It's almost like a little bit of an offshoot of Russia in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I was completely jet lagged, but I remember that I got to the hotel that I was staying at. And you know, you have like those no smoking signs where it's like the round circle with the cigarette kind of with the diagonal line going through it. Well, it wasn't those on the doors, but what it was that sign with no guns. So I was like, hold up, where am I? And because it was just like, this is a 5-star hotel in the middle of Sofia, and there's no guns allowed in here. I'm like, so hold on, what's this town about? But yeah, people randomly just walk around with gun holsters. It's so funny because some of the guys just like, you know, leather jackets, shaved heads, guns with holsters. And it's almost like they've literally just jumped off the set of one of the Bourne movies, like one of the extras or something. So at first I was just like, must not leave hotel room. Must just stay in the hotel room. I'm a little scared. After like the third, fourth week, it was just like, yeah. It's like, hey, what's up? You know, just rolling along. It was just like, right, right, good.
Just curious, were there any similar situations you could recall from your time living in London? Because that's where you're from originally.
I am born and raised in London. Mm-hmm. Literally spent my whole life in London. And I can honestly say no. Really not.
No, there's no comparison. London and Sofia, two very different cities. Yeah. I would assume they would be, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like being brought up in London. It's a real multicultural hotpot, like fusion in all nationalities or ethnicities. It's just vast. So I think, you know, more places are like that. I mean, New York's pretty much like that. Mm-hmm. But I think other places are a little rare in terms of that aspect of how much fusion and variety you have in one space.
Sure.
With the density of people and the population of people.
Are there any adjustments you have to make? Let's say growing up in London, living in London for such a long time, you live in Los Angeles now, which is another multicultural city. Going to a place like Sofia in Bulgaria where it's, let's say, maybe more homogenous. How do you adjust when you're not working and you're just sort of walking around?
Well, I think communication is the first barrier. Few people spoke English, but not many did. Mm-hmm. So, you know, thank God for Google Translate. Like, what a lifesaver.
Sure.
Because without it, I'd be ordering all sorts of stuff from a menu.
Right.
And I'm really selective about what I eat. So I was like, yay for Google. But in terms of you know, you can't really adjust, you just go with it.
Sure.
It's almost like you go with the flow.
Yeah.
And the cast, we all sort of congregated together. It was like creating a family out there, even though we'd work for hours and hours on set, because we were so far from home. Mm-hmm. We did a lot of things together, lots of dinners, you know, just a lot of sort of like popping out, grabbing drinks, going, doing some fun things like hikes and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So it was a lot of camaraderie and sort of nice to create a family atmosphere. Mm-hmm. But in terms of actually being in the city, I mean, I'd never been there, and people that I know haven't been there. So no one could kind of say, okay, this is, you know, here, this is like the top 10 things that you need to sort of like do or whatever. But also as well, the crew were fantastic, and the production, people in production were so at hand with everything and anything that it just made it a real pleasure to be out there.
Mm. What kind of traveler are you? Like, when you go to a place anywhere new, how would you describe your travel
personality? She has a jacket that says hell on heels, right? So
beware. I mean, I used to be such an avid traveler many years ago. Like, I would go to at least a good few different places and spend like a good few months in each place. Mm-hmm. And I used to love doing that because I think you get to inhabit more of a culture the longer that you stay somewhere. But unfortunately, now it's just all, you know, a matter of time. There's not enough time to really absorb or get involved so much unless I am somewhere working. Because unfortunately, if you're away, it's like if you snooze, you lose.
Yeah.
You know, so opportunities are sometimes few and far between. Thank God for technology and being able to do self-tapes, which is an audition comes through, but you can have you can do it wherever you are in the world, which is great. And it's more popular now than it's ever been before. But sometimes it's like, you know, they want to see you. They want to get to know you. They want to see what your energy is like. They want you to have like chemistry reads with other people. And if you're not around, it's, you know, you lose the opportunity. And there's a lot of actors and there's not enough jobs. So you tell me, holiday, work,
right.
Balance.
I've known you about 10 years now, I want to say.
Yeah, because it's been about that amount of time since I've been
in town. Since you've been in town, right.
Wow, geez, God,
how did I meet you, by the way? I can't remember how you and I connected.
You know, I think it was at one of the IFLA.
IFLA, for people who don't know, is the Indian Film Festival of Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And I probably met you on the red carpet.
I think, yeah, around. I think you interviewed me or something.
Yeah.
It was very much something like that.
Right. So when I had met you, at what point were you in your career? Were you just starting? Were you kind of working your way up the chain? Where were you career-wise?
Oh, I was green.
You were green?
Oh, okay. Yeah. If anyone doesn't know what green is, it's just very, very new and just really sort of landing on your face and tripping over your own feet and just learning as you go along. But the more you do it, trial and error, the more you learn. And as long as you don't keep on making the same mistakes, then you're evolving.
So the reason I ask that is I'm kind of curious how this whole thing started for you. Like where did the switch flip for you to be like, you know what? I got to be in acting. I got to be in movies.
So growing up, my nickname was Mike TV from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory because...
Nice.
Oh, yeah, well, no, because yeah. I mean, just put me in front of a TV set.
Uh-huh.
And I would be there for hours and hours until like my mom and dad would be like, you know, that's enough. Like time to stop. And I'm like, oh, really? So TV and movies were something that just I was so passionate about, like really, really was. But coming from an Indian culture, it really was never in my path to follow a career in it.
Right.
Academic subjects, just, you know, straight A's, just it was just like work. And so I went to university or what you guys call college and did my degree in computer science and majored in like artificial intelligence with business and marketing and left there. And my very first job, I was working for one of Richard Branson's companies and helping that grow. Mm-hmm. And it was great. I mean, I don't know how amazing that was, like leaving college and going straight working for Richard Branson. It's only after that you go, wow. Yeah. But, you know, I enjoyed it. But there was just something, an element of something that just felt was missing. So after that, I did that for a couple of years. And then I bounced into being a publicist, which I think was very, very interesting. And that was in music. We're working with DJs and record labels and artists and clubs and really sort of seeing how that mechanics works. And that was rather fun because I was really into music, especially the whole sort of dance culture and what you call EDM out here. But that was like, I was burning out because it's like you're working all day and then you have to be out in the evening with your clients. And you know, so it's like, it's pretty full on. So I was like, oh my God, this is like exhausting. But I still always loved like TV and film. And I had a friend and... she basically would, you know, went to acting classes. And one day I said, can I come with you? She was like, yeah, sure. And it was a method. Lee Strasberg, he created the method. It was an acting class and I went into it and I have no idea what was being said. I was like, are we talking English? It was just like, it was gobbledygook to me. Like I had no idea, which made me even more fascinated by it. Because it was something that I could not understand. It was, you know, talking about things like sense memory and all these things. And I was like, I don't know. Anyway, so soon after that, I started going to a few acting classes. And then I reached out to an agency, you know, to see, hey, would you take me on for commercial work or something? Like, this would be really cool. But in the meantime, I decided to be an extra. And just to be able to get myself onto TV sets and movie sets. And it was mainly movie sets. And it was like really good movie sets. Mm. And so I was able to watch a high caliber of actors work and be able to see how the crews worked and really sort of like learn as I was going along. And so then one of the agencies reached out and said, you know, come in and have a meeting with us. And so I went in and he gave me some text and he was just like, will you just read this? And I was like, I read it. And he was like, right, I want to represent you as an actress. And I was like, really? I was like, can I get my leg back?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
And he was like, no, I believe in you. Cut to, he was my agent for over 6.5 years. And
wow.
Yeah.
All this is going on in the United Kingdom.
The United Kingdom, right. Yeah. And one of my first projects was a project called Children of Men with Julianne Moore and Clive Owen, and the director was Alfonso Cuarón.
Mm-hmm.
And Alfonso would let me come on set every day and be able to watch. And I think that's the beauty of everything, like just watching.
Okay,
you learn.
You can't hate me for what I'm about to say.
Go on.
I finally saw Children of Men for the first time this year.
Hey, it's all right, isn't it?
It's a good movie. Yeah. It holds up, even though it's, 10 years older.
I think so, too. Whole apocalyptic and stuff like that. But because of that movie, that put a few pounds, because that's our currency in England, in my pocket, which enabled me to come out to LA to study with an acting teacher.
I have a bad joke here.
Go on.
Go for it.
Go on.
Let's hear it.
The pounds I lost went to her bank account.
Hey, yeah, boom, boom.
You did not disappoint, sir. Yeah.
Told you
that was
a bad joke.
That was quite quick, actually. I'd give you that.
So one of your better bad jokes. I like.
Yeah, well,
not bad at all.
Ferrell's not here to make fun of me. So.
I know. Hey. It's just missing that, yeah. I'm always curious, and I always like seeing how things kind of come together. You're telling a great narrative about how you start off with artificial intelligence and then made your way into acting. Growing up, you said you'd be parked in front of a television set for hours and hours on end. What are some of the, or who are rather, some of the people that you would watch that maybe later on or even now you might be somewhat channeling or getting inspiration from?
For example, like we used to watch a lot of Bollywood movies growing up. And I used to really enjoy watching, like, Amitabh Bachchan. Like, there was something about him that I just really, really...
It's the Dishoom.
And I really liked watching, Shah Rukh Khan and Madhuri Dixit. And there was just always, like, this, like, truthfulness to their work that I just found very captivating when I used to watch it. And I was like, how do they do that? What are they doing? And they were just being them, but just really believing what was happening in that present moment. And so it's those things, because if that took me in, it was just like, that made a change in the way that I was thinking or feeling or my mood. And I just found that really magical.
Mm.
Like, I really do. Like, there's some things that I watch where I'm just like, oh, you've just changed the way that I'm thinking. And I think that's so powerful. That's kind of magic. So me being a storyteller and watching other storytellers is very inspiring. I love watching, I still love watching, like, Jessica Chastain, and I really like Margot Robbie's work. I think she really goes there, and, DiCaprio and Daniel Day-Lewis and, like, all these really amazing people who just inhabit their character and just really go there. And I just love being taken on a journey.
Mm.
I want to have a fun question for you, because you mentioned three Bollywood names.
Mm.
And I want to do association here. So you mentioned Amitabh Bachchan. Would a fair comparison to him, would that name be Sean Connery? The Indian Sean Connery?
I think I adore Sean Connery, but I think Sean Connery he was always pretty much Sean Connery, where I think I've seen Amitabh Bachchan kind of go from, as he's evolved as a human being, he's got deeper, for example, watching Black, I think that was some of the most outstanding work. Do I think Sean Connery would do that? I don't think so.
Mm, okay.
So Sean Connery, like, always got hired for being Sean Connery.
Yeah.
Whereas I think Amitabh Bachchan sort of, at first, would just do him.
Yeah.
But then I think he kind of really enjoyed finding and getting lost in characters.
Yeah.
Because...
Yeah.
I just think his work got better and better and better as the years went by.
Sure.
Because he used to be the quintessential angry young man, right? That was his tagline from the 70s into the 80s. And then, like you said, I agree. I think he evolved over time.
Yeah.
I just think that deep voice is what does it, though. He's got that deep Sean Connery voice. Anyways, who would you compare Madhuri Dixit to?
Ooh.
Interesting.
She's my favorite.
She's a lot of people's favorite.
You know, maybe someone like Julianne Moore.
Okay. I never thought about that. Okay, that's good.
Comparison.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Shah Rukh Khan, who would you compare him to?
Ooh. He would be more like a sort of like a Brad Pitt. Like when you think of Brad Pitt when he was in 12 Monkeys, sure. And kind of a little bit like went kind of cuckoo there and like in Fight Club. And when you think of Shah Rukh Khan in, you know, he's played where he had autism and where he's kind of, what was it?
Oh, My Name is Khan?
Yeah, My Name is Khan. Mm-hmm. And then the other movie where he, was a little bit sort of psycho and you know, he kind of goes there. He's not shy.
He's not shy.
No,
and
not
so, and that's what I really liked about Brad Pitt's work too. Like he's not shy just because he's a good looking guy. He will go there. There's not that fear of just, you know, I've got to keep looking good. It's just like, no, this is what I believe. I believe in all these extra things, these physicalities and these impediments or whatever, all these things to kind of like add layers to the onion in a way.
Right. So let's take this line of questioning one step further. I have no context of this because I'm born and raised here in the States. And so I know how Hollywood works. I don't know how acting works in the United Kingdom. So walk us through what it was like being you growing up, being in front of television as an aspiring actress at some point in your life. You're seeing Bollywood. What other faces do you see on television or movies that you were able to relate to? Or did you have that when you were growing up?
I mean, I would try and relate myself to everyone in a weird way. Mm-hmm. Everything I watched, I would be like, does that fit into my world? I just always like to find a commonality in something just so I can relate to it, which is a little bit silly, I know. But at the end of the day, it's just the way that my mind worked.
Right.
I would try and understand why they were doing what they were doing, even just to be able to work out what their ethos in life was or what their agenda was. I just found that fascinating. Maybe, you know, like human psychology is pretty fascinating, why we do what we do when we do it. And so for me, when I watch things, those are the questions I kind of ask.
Sure. And on the other end, what kind of challenges you have personally faced? Were there barriers you had? Or mean, were there obstacles that were kind of in your way? What were some
things? Everyone always likes to say no.
Yeah.
Well, like, do you get a bigger obstacle than that?
Nope.
Not exactly. At all, right? It's just like, hey.
No is by far the biggest obstacle.
Right. Yeah.
But then I'm like, well, there's another way to try and get a yes. So let me try and be strategical here.
So what was your strategy? How did you get the yes?
You know what? Horses for courses for each situation and circumstance. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, it's like sometimes it's a firm no. But it's like, you know, once I work with my team, it's like always fun to strategize or kind of be like, okay, if that's a dead end, let's try and think about it or reassess, take a little backward step. Let's try and do something else to be able to navigate. Sometimes it can work. And sometimes it's just like, it's not going to.
Yeah.
But as long as I keep learning from each situation and keep evolving myself, I think that's the most important thing I can do as me and as a human being.
Right. So you come here from London, you come to LA.
Yeah, and I mean, even the whole process of even trying to be here, to work here, was a rigmarole.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's tough to... The whole immigration process is took years to be able to just be here.
Yeah.
It was only 2 years ago that I've become an American citizen.
Right.
So, you know, that's a huge thank you. That's a huge accomplishment.
Yeah, it is a huge accomplishment.
That is. That is. Yeah.
So, but there were lots of tears along the way.
Yeah.
And finance.
It's expensive, no doubt.
We don't use pounds here.
Right.
So, one thing I wanted to ask, I know you being the gifted actor that you are, you can work in different accents and things like that. You know, years ago, I think it might have been a couple years ago, you know, someone like Aziz Ansari, I think, was asked, like, you know, what kind of roles are you offered in terms of, like, what kind of characters and things like that. And sometimes they ask him to do specific accents, an Indian accent or something like that. What's your take on that? And he, you know, necessarily didn't want to take a certain role because they wanted to sort of force him to use a certain accent. What's your thought on you know, someone who is Asian or South Asian?
Well,
your thoughts on that?
I tell actors that the best thing you can do is practice accents every day. I think it's the thing that's given me the versatility from going from a Middle Eastern to an Arabic to an Indian to Italian to French to South American to an American standard to a Southern to different dialects of British to different levels of Indian. Mm. I mean, it's the thing that I work on the hardest. And I still, even to this day, even though I've been in the States for all these years, I still every week work with an American dialect coach because I'm in the American market. So already I'm in, you know, got a bit of a handicapped because I'm not American. So not only are you doing the acting, but you have doing the accent. And the amount of jobs that I've lost because it's not on point is, there's been many. So what I can do is to keep on working with those things that I can improve on, because those are the things that will give me the leverage. And accents are definitely the thing that will give me the leverage to be able to book work.
What's the most difficult accent or most challenging that you've had to work on?
I think the American has been, because it's not just the sounds, it's the way that the phrasing and you know, because us Brits, we talk sort of kind of like, and you guys are just like, hey, it's the weekend, and you know, how you doing? You know, just like, it's just like, you know, there's like
it's the weekend.
Right? There's a different flow to it. Yeah. And there's like different points of like an exclamation or all these things where in British, we're just like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And so rhythmically, that was the hardest to be able to sort of grasp.
Reminds me of the Oscars last year. Was it the Oscars last year where Christian Bale was won in some category and he's up there on stage?
And everyone's like, oh my God, you
have a British accent?
Yeah.
He was like, always had it.
But it's Cockney. It's like, yeah, I just want to thank everyone for like, you know, it's a little bit like Michael Caine.
Yeah.
And it's so bizarre because his accent's flawless. But I mean, he's been doing this since he was a kid.
Yeah.
Although
I can never forgive him for Jaws of Revenge. It's probably the worst movie I've ever seen him in.
But, you know, on the flip side, where I work, there are several people that are British. And so I think one thing I appreciate is some of the phrases. Like I was talking to a colleague that's British today, and he was talking about something, and he was basically like, yeah, I told him, you know, off you go. But something like that is not something that we say here.
Right.
But it's so quintessentially British. And even if I were to say off you go, it sounds horrible. But then if you say it, it totally
it's
works.
Like, off you go.
Right.
Yeah, because we have like bizarre things like, oh my God, that's bonkers.
Right.
And like, yeah, just.
If we
just
say, hey man, that's bonkers. It's like, are you from 1985?
Did you guys?
And I love this word. It's like, what a load of codswallop, right?
Codswallop. Yeah. Oh my goodness. Like, I'm going to have to Google the etiology of that.
It's such a good sentence because it's just like, what on earth? It's like, what load of codswallop? Like, you know? And it's like, that's one of my favorites.
Oh man. Did
everybody here watch Snatch?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so one of my favorite scenes in that movie, it's Vinnie Jones and Dennis Farina. They're walking out a building, and Dennis Farina's asking, he's trying to get this diamond back that was his, but someone stole. And he's asking Vinnie Jones, where are we going? He said, we're going to the store that was bugged. And then Dennis says, what does that mean? I thought you guys spawned this English, and I can't understand what you're saying. Because, you know, American English versus English, right? And just a blog means robbed.
Yeah.
And that's what Vinny says, like, blogged, robbed. And then Dennis is like, ah, screw you.
Cockney rhyme and slang.
Right, yeah. And he plays a Cockney character in the movie, right? Yeah. So every time I think of a British accent, I think of that scene. Yeah.
That's codswallop.
Right?
Is that even the correct
It's an actual word in the dictionary. Oh,
nice. Good job, Devesh. You're now adopted as a Brit.
There we go. Welcome to the clan.
We've taken Tamina and we've sent you back in exchange.
Go.
Yeah, off you go.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
How often do you go back to the United Kingdom?
I try and go back once or twice a year, just because I have a lot of family there. So it's always nice to catch up.
And what's the biggest difference that you would see culturally between home in here, which is your other home now too, but still.
I mean, culturally, when I'm in England, I'm very part of my culture. You know, traditions and with family and all that kind of stuff. And here, I don't have that.
Right.
Because my family's not here. And, and I've got a huge extended family, like uncles, aunts, cousins, like, you know, like freaking gremlins.
It's a great film.
It's a great film. It is a great film. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So in that way, it's, you know, it's rather isolating here because, when it comes to, like, towards Christmas and stuff like that, I'm like, oh my God, I'm on my own.
Right.
And I just get really sad. So then I always try and go back because it's to feel part of something.
Sure. Well, London is really nice at Christmas time.
It's so beautiful.
It is. I've never been, so I don't know. I mean, I've been to London, but not gorgeous.
It really is.
I remember in the 80s I went, and that's when the Hamleys toy store was still around.
Oh, it's still there.
Is it still
there? Oh, yeah.
I know your stuff. Come on, you gotta know your stuff, Tabash.
I was busy hanging out at Marouche eating Lebanese food.
Oh, my God. You know, every time I go, it's one of the first places that I go to.
Right? So it's not just me. I do this. I was there about 2 months ago, or about a month and a half ago, and it has to always be on my list.
Always.
Like, I have to go to Marouche, whether it's Big Marouche or Medium Marouche.
Doesn't matter. The food's the same. Yep. Always. Has to happen. One of the first things. Parents are like, where do you want to go? Marouche. Tam. And I'm just like, oh, that's what they call me. And I'm just like, where? You asked me what I wanted. I've been away for like almost a year. And like, you said, I don't get it. Don't ask me what I want to eat then.
Yeah. So do you have one fun question before we dive back into another serious question? But fun question is, do you have any go-to spots here in LA that you'd recommend?
I literally eat an acai bowl every day. Like, okay. I love them.
So very LA.
From any particular place or one you make?
I mean, I kind of bop around.
Okay.
You know, I still look for the perfect one.
Okay.
But they are, I think it's a little fattening, but it is just my, like, I just I love it.
Yeah. Okay. What do you love about LA in general? But I want to look
at Sunshines.
Well, your last name is Sunny.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I feel like you're biased when you say that. But, you know.
Well, no, because sad seasonal quiet depression. Mm-hmm. There is something to be said about
Absolutely.
It.
Yeah.
Like my energy in LA is just like off the scale. But in London, with the weather, do I want to leave the house? No. Do I get much done?
Yeah.
Fortunately not. It affects my disposition. Like,
yeah.
The sun kind of gives me that, yeah, you gotta do stuff, gotta do stuff, gotta do stuff.
Right. So with that energy you have here, how in your observations, being out there, I know you work a lot. So when you're out there working, how have you seen Hollywood evolve as an industry? I mean, it's you've been here 10 years. When you came here 10 years ago, you know, Slumdog Millionaire was a thing, and we didn't see as many brown people on TV. Or on the big screen, but we do now. So what has been your observation of our evolution?
So with Slumdog, I was actually in the running with it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. At my meetings and stuff with Danny Boyan and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's quite fun.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I was really grateful that from the start, I've always had good opportunities like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next movie was one with Leonardo DiCaprio that Ridley Scott was doing that was kind of in the running for. And so in a way, it almost feels that there were less projects, but more opportunity for some reason.
Okay.
I know it sounds really weird, but now I feel like there's more projects, but it's weird. I'm not getting the opportunities like I had at that time because maybe there's just a lot more stuff. I mean, I think TV and streaming is something that has changed so much. So there is the whole, you know, there is a lot more opportunities to work. Whereas I think that the beauty of like making like the epic movies has sort of been taken away a little. Because now it's just, there's so much being made that things get lost If there was a Slumdog that came out now, I don't know if it would have the same impact like it did, mm-hmm. because where would it go? Would it go straight to Netflix?
Right.
Would it go to the theater? Would it go like just to Hulu? You know, would it be a Disney thing now? So there's so many avenues to watch things that I think some things that are even like epically amazing in Uber might get a little lost.
Hmm.
Does that make sense?
Perfect sense, but go ahead.
So would you say there's more of a gradation now in terms of maybe tiers or things like that? And so your opportunities, would you say you have to sort of relook at what an opportunity is based on, okay, what media am I going to be on? Am I going to be on streaming? Am I going to be, you know, in a conventional theater or the small screen on TV somewhere? Does your thought process change to sort of go with that, the times, I guess?
Maybe it's the fact that there are a lot more actors of my type doing this now. So, whereas before there probably were less.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's got something to do with it, which is amazing because, you know, Indian families were a little strict about going into the arts. Sure. And mm-hmm. I think they're a lot more open now.
Yeah.
And because of that, there's more opportunities for people to write roles for Indian cultures,
right.
and various different cultures.
Right.
Because it's not just going into acting. It's like, well, if you're in the arts, you can be writing and producing and directing and all these amazing things. Like, you know, I just, like, I really value people's work, like Mira Nayal, and you know, they've been in this industry for a really long time, and I'm sure they've really battled hard order for their work or even to be noticed and kind of work to kind of like stay in a certain, like, pinnacle, really. So, yeah, there are more opportunities. Mm-hmm. But it does seem different, and I can't really put my finger on why or explain it or understand why. But maybe because I was really fresh when I came here too, and so it was all completely, completely new. But now it's my life, and I see this on an everyday basis. So to me, it's the business of acting.
So
because you're in the entertainment industry, whereas before it was just like, I have no idea what the industry was. It was just like, oh my god, I'm going up for this project with this, ooh, god, scared, oh great, let's just try it, what happens? But now it's just like it's the understanding of the everyday. It's just like, great, okay, I'll just do my best and you know, keep moving on, and that's what one does. You can only do your best. You can't control anything apart from what you bring to the table.
So if you had the opportunity to affect change on a macro level of the opportunities. You were saying, you know, maybe the opportunities are different now, and they feel like they're less. If you had the omnipotent power to make some sort of shift, what would you do to maybe open it up more opportunity-wise, or, you know, maybe even nudge it in a certain direction?
You know, I think it always results back to the source, and the source is the material, which is the storytellers. You know, what stories are out there? Everyone's got a story in them. You know, we have such amazing lives. And it's just really sort of like bringing those lives or the journeys of people's lives onto the screen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, let's talk about Gandhi. I mean, that film still resonates in me. I can't think of another movie that's doing that to me right now. Or seeing anything that's doing that to me right now, because that is an epic story. So I think it results down to, at the end of the day, my job is that I'm a storyteller, and I tell a story from what someone's written. So it's always channeling back to, you know, the writers just kind of finding those epic, epic, beautiful stories that people will just, I mean, I watch the news a lot, and you hear, you know, people's lives, etc., and the impacts that they make and all the things that they do, and then those become stories, and those become movies, and those are the things that I feel take an impact, and those are the things that I really want to be involved in, because they are true life stories, and they're, you know, like, we're always like, there's conflict, war, and people that survive things like that. It's just like, wow. The fight, the survival, the struggle, just and people need to see things like this. We're now in a world where, you know, we're kind of lost in social media and we're all kind of like seeking for the like and not realizing that people just to get through one day to the next is huge.
Mm.
And I think those stories kind of are few and far between now, personally.
Right. So, saying. Tamina, Tamina's storyteller. Where do we find out more about your story? Where are you on social media? What are your social media, your website? Tell us how we could find you and resonate with your story.
So I'm a bit of a avid Instagrammer. I like Instagram. Photos and pictures and so yeah, my handle for Instagram is Tamina Sunny, and that's spelt TEHMINASUNNY.
And her Instagram is definitely, I follow you, and you're definitely a bright, sunny person to follow. So,
yay. Yay. Come into the light.
Come into your light, yes. Right? Where else can we find your website?
Well, I mean, it's the same name. Keep everything really, really, really simple. Easy. Yeah.
So, Tamina,
I believe it needs a bit of an update, though. Not going to lie.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't not even like been on it for a while.
Wow.
Oops.
Get on it, Tamina.
Yeah, right?
Get on it.
Gosh.
Dibesh.
Yes.
Where can you find us?
You can find us on many different platforms. You can find us on iTunes, on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play Music, or anywhere else you listen to podcasts on.
And I believe we have a website too, right?
We sure do.
Is yours updated?
Ours is updated, yes.
Ooh,
yeah.
It is, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got you, Tamina.
There you go.
We're one up on you.
I'm Tamina, jealous.
It's bonkers.
Oh, what a load of codswallop. See how
touché,
it goes?
My friend.
So that's the context it would go to, yeah.
That's a good setup.
You got it.
All right.
The website, for FYI, is ah1.live. Tamina, one more question before we wrap up.
Oh, yes, let's play.
Do you speak Gujarati?
Yeah.
she sighed.
So, I mean, when I was in England, you know, because I was like back and forth from Bulgaria and I got to spend a lot of time with my family in England. I mean, so, I was there. It was a little bumpy.
So,
you know.
So, hey, Kemcho.
Saruche.
Kemcho. Saruche. Saruche. Majo. Majo macho.
Why do I giggle?
Hey, why are you giggling? Yeah. Your Gujarati's fine.
I only know the bad words. I have a Gujarati friend.
Oh, don't
always...
go there. Don't
See,
go there.
I don't know the bad words.
I'll teach you after we're done recording.
I don't know the bad words.
I'll teach you.
Badmas manascha.
Yes, I'm very badmas.
Yes. Tamina, thank you for joining us. This was a great conversation.
Thanks for having me.
You were very sunny for us.
Ooh, love that.
No codswallop here.
Nope, no codswallop.
Can we have the sun come back for another episode sometime in the future?
Love to.
Because I know our conversation isn't over.
No, I mean, keep going on and on and on.
We can, right?
Yeah.
But
I'll go do some fun things and then come back and
report
and chat about
us.
It. How's that sound?
That sounds like a plan.
Yeah,
a sunny plan. So on behalf of Dibesh and Ferial, who's not here, and Marvin and Visual Communications, this is Pimo coming to you from the Potluck Studios at Little Tokyo's Visual Communications. This is Story Trails in Action. Thank you so much for joining us for another episode. We'll see you and talk with you next week when we bring in another actress. Her name is Sheila Houlihan, so we'll talk to her next week for week 3. But on behalf of the team here,
be good, y'all.